This is Audible.
Black Talon, First Mark, by Andy Clark. Read by Emma Gregory. Prologue. Thindrail awoke to the sound of bells tolling, sharp and frantic. Their warning cry wrenched him up out of some half-remembered dream and into the cold darkness of early dawn. The elf fought free of the furs he had slept under, grabbing for his cloak and sword belt. The tolling was incessant. It jarred through his skull and made the hairs rise on his arms. Thindrail pulled on fur-lined boots, glad that he always slept clad in his ranger's garb, for preparedness as much as to ward off the high mountain cold. It was standard practice amongst the Swifthawk patrols to do this. They had always to be ready for danger at a moment's notice, for to them fell the duty of warning the enclaves of order about impending threats. He begrudged every second wasted. His heart thumped rapidly in his chest, and his thoughts grew less fogged by the second. The stone chamber was unlit, but elven eyes were sharp, and in the scant light that fell through the arched window, Thindrail could see that he was alone. Nestrail and Yillith were not in their beds. He rose quickly and crossed the chamber to the window, trying to gauge what manner of threat had triggered the alarm. The bell stopped tolling as he did so, its sudden absence as jarring as its peals had been. Snow fell thick and ghostly outside. The fortress stood at the bottom of a wide crater, rather like the maw of a volcano atop the mountain's hollow peak. Thindrail could barely see the crater's edge, while its ragged rim was lost to even his keen sight. He thought he could detect sounds out there, movement perhaps, or voices. There was a strange keening note in the air that was not the wind, something he felt in his teeth and behind his eyes. Thindrail frowned, concentrating, trying to place that strange noise through the muffling curtains of snow. He thought for a moment that he caught flickers of green light, there and gone amidst the snowfall, but try as he might, he couldn't spot the phenomenon again.
Thindrail!
The shout broke his concentration and made him jump. He spun to see Yillith in the doorway, wild-eyed with fear.
"What is it? What's out there?"
he asked. Yillith shook his head in response. Only now did Thindrail see the dark stains on Yillith's cloak, the spatters of red on his face, the sword dangling drawn and forgotten in one shaking hand.
"Are you hurt, my love?"
he asked, hastening forward. Yillith stepped back, flinching. Thindrail stopped, now far more frightened.
"It's not mine," said Yillith. "There's dozens of them out there. They took Nestrail, tore her up like parchment in front of me."
"Who did? Where are Relieth and the others?"
asked Thindrail, hand dropping to the hilt of his sword. He stared over Yillith's shoulder, fearful of some unknown killer coming up the corridor.
"Relieth reached the alarm. It stopped. Oh, gods of old, it stopped. They must have..."
Thindrail gripped Yillith and stared into his roving eyes.
"Look at me. What is happening?"
Yillith's pupils focused, sharpened. He steadied himself with a visible effort.
"Kalian and Beleria are making for the north perch. We must climb to the south. I don't know what's attacked us, Thindrail. By some glamour or sorcerous illusion, they made themselves look like elves, but they weren't."
He choked, barely able to contain his overflowing emotion.
"The night sentries are nearly all dead, and those things are... There's no time. I don't know what it was. I don't know how to explain it to you. Just trust me. We must leave now."
Thindrail nodded.
"South Perch, I understand. Come, we'll take the Widder Stair," he said.
His blade whispered as he drew it from its scabbard, and the two of them dashed out into the corridor. High Crater Watch was not an especially large fortress. In truth, it was little more than a glorified ranger's lodge, occupying a stone tower and a clutch of small outbuildings, all nestled in a crater atop a shattered mountain peak. For 3 decades now, it had played host to the patrols of the Swifthawk agents, the elven rangers who plied the clouds in their hawk-drawn skycutters and bore messages between the cities of order. In all that time, Thindrail had never before had cause to be glad that the watch was a simple structure and easily escaped from. He and Yillith ran along the cold stone corridor in the grey gloom, turning onto a winding stairway that coiled up widdershins around the tower's outside to the south perch. There, under a covered ledge that jutted out from the broken peak, the hawks and skycutters waited. As they ran, the keening note cut through the air. It was growing louder now, causing a strange sensation of heat to rise in Thindrail's gut and a tingle through his skin. Motes of blue light burst across his vision. He blinked his eyes rapidly to clear them, but soon realized the lights were not some hallucination, but actual sparks of blue fire drifting in the air.
"What is that?" he asked as they ran.
Yillith shook his head.
"I don't know, but it cannot be anything good. Our attackers were doing something when we fled from them. A ritual, perhaps. There was green fire in the air. I fear we don't want to be here to feel its touch."
The elves burst up through a trapdoor and onto the perch. Thindrail saw that both the perch's great hawks, Hasha and Thiri, were already awake and alarmed. The huge birds fixed him with fierce avian glares, their beaks clacking and their plumage puffed.
"Take Hasha," said Yillith. "You get him bridled. I'll ready the skycutter."
Thindrail crossed the snowy platform as swiftly as he dared, wary of ice rendered invisible beneath drifted snow. Heavy cloth awnings were strung above the perch, and large braziers kept burning night and day, both for the hawk's comfort and to stave off the worst of the weather. Still, at this frozen hour and in such poor light, Thindrail didn't want to risk slipping over the sheer edge of the tower and plunging the 100 or so feet to the crater's floor. Snatching up a complex arrangement of tack and harness, the elf began readying Hasha for flight. The great hawk stamped its taloned feet and clacked its beak in agitation, bearing Thindrail's attentions with bad-tempered indignance.
"I know you sense it, Wing Brother, something terrible coming," muttered Thindrail as he worked, "but please allow this of me so we might escape more swiftly."
Finishing his task, Thindrail glanced along the length of the platform to see Yillith pushing a skycutter chariot towards him. He leaned over one side of the elegant vehicle, its construction so light he could propel it at a jog with little effort. The shrill note suddenly redoubled in force, and the two hawks shrieked and flapped, the downdraft of their wings buffeting Thindrail and almost knocking him from his feet. Dancing motes of blue fire swirled through the air, drawing together and weaving through each other. They no longer resembled random starbursts, but purposeful swarms that left glimmering afterimages burned into the air behind them. To his shock, Thindrail saw that Yillith's nose was bleeding freely, as were his ears. It was then he felt a wetness beneath his own eye, and dabbed at it with a fingertip that came away red.
"What is this?" he asked, then gasped as pain raced through his body. It felt as though his veins were on fire. His heart pounded, and each beat felt like a nail driven further into his chest. Yillith screamed and staggered, the skycutter skidding away from him as he fell to his hands and knees. Through a red haze, Thindrail grabbed at the chariot, dragged it to him. Clumsy, he slammed the hitching gear together, barely registering the pain, as his cold, numbed fingers smashed against the mechanism. He shot a glance at Hasha, who was wide-eyed and straining at his traces, but otherwise unharmed by whatever awful spellcraft was at work.
"Yillith!"
he gasped, then retched a spatter of bright red blood across the snow. The keening rose to an unnatural screech, and winding sigils of blue fire raced through the air like swarms of insane fireflies. Thindrail staggered 2 steps, then felt his legs give out. He slumped against the side of the chariot, reaching towards Yilith, noting with horror that droplets of blood were squeezing out of his skin and forming delicate red strings of beads over the back of his hand. A dozen feet away, Yilith stumbled up with a supreme effort, staggering closer. Thindrell felt sick with horror at the sight of the blood that poured from Yilith's face. He was half-blinded by his own gory tears, yet it seemed as though the blue fire was weaving itself in webs around Yilith. Where it flowed, his love's flesh writhed. Yilith gave a last lurch of effort, throwing himself forward. Too late, Thindrail realized that the other elf was not attempting to reach him, but to strike him. Yilith's hands drove into Thindrail's chest and pitched him backwards into the skycutter in an untidy heap.
"Kay Selima!"
screamed Yilith, the command that told the great hawks to leap skywards at once. Thindrail croaked a wordless denial as he felt the chariot lurch and skim across the platform, gathering speed. There came a familiar moment of weightlessness as the craft left the ground. Then the skycutter was arcing away into the falling snow. Thindrail got one hand over the railing, hauling himself up so that he could stare back with bloodied eyes towards the fortress below. He could see nothing but the south perch, seeming to float like an island on a white ocean. It was engulfed in dancing blue and green flame that ate away at everything around it. Vicious green light spilled up from below, underlighting the scene in a hellish fashion. The awnings were curling like parchment and melting away. The braziers were shuddering. The stone itself seemed to burn, while Yilith was barely visible, lying motionless in a spreading crimson slick. Only Thiri seemed untouched, shrieking and flapping at her perch until her bindings snapped and she leapt into the air and away. The torturous sound receded as the skycutter climbed rapidly until the outpost vanished altogether. Thindrail slumped back, true tears joining the crimson sludge still squeezing from his eyes. He shook his head slowly, shock setting in and causing him to shudder with more than just cold. As Hasher bore the chariot higher and higher into the heavens, Thindrail felt consciousness leave him again, welcoming the black oblivion that waited beyond. Act 1. Chapter 1. Far to the north of the city of Hammerhal Aksha, amidst the thick, sulphur-fed groves of the Haranheim jungle, a village stood in ruins. If the place had ever had a name, it was gone now. Buried beneath the drifts of blackened fronds and sulphurous dust that were slowly reclaiming its buildings. The bloated jungle moon loomed over a clearing that contained a few dozen crumbling structures. They stood within a rotting palisade wall, just enough buildings to raise the ghosts of streets between them and lend the town an impression of civilization, of imposed order. Yet the fields outside the walls were overgrown by annoy trees and strangler's twist, while the gaping hole in the village wall and the hacked bones strewn amidst the ruins put the lie to any notion that this tiny corner of Akshi had been tamed. Crouched amidst the jungle's fringe, Neve Blacktalon studied the settlement intently. The nameless village and all its hopeful, pious settlers were long dead. Yet the prickle on her skin beneath her resilient suit of gilded sigmarite told her that something else had slithered in to inhabit the carcass of their butchered dream. Something that lit the night with eerie witchlight. Neve's senses were fully extended, alive to the slightest scent or sound, the merest vibration in the air. She reached out and felt the jungle around her, flitwings and diaphanids drifting through the canopy, treglings nosing between tree roots. She felt the strange movements within the slain village before her, long-limbed things stalking like wading birds, drums thumping, a chaotic rhythm, unnatural beings cavorting. She sensed other movements amidst the jungle itself, but these concerned her less. Sigmar's gift tugged at her, the siren sense of her latest mark close at hand. The quarry, whose presence she would always feel, no matter how near or far, until she or they were dead. Neve was one with the world around her, and she tasted the chaotic taint that soured it. It gathered thick on her tongue and made her scowl with disgust and anger. From her right, she felt gusts of air stir the jungle foliage. She heard the sounds of subtle movement draw closer, something large doing its utmost not to be heard. She scented the tang of ozone through the jungle's sulphur. Curling her tongue, she gave a clicking signal. Two low, quick sounds, a pause, then a third. The signal was returned. A moment before Tarion Arlor slid through the fronds of two Anioi's to join her.
"Don't tell me that Sigmar's finest, Knight Zephyros, needs that damned signal to verify it is me, Black Talon. I know you heard my approach," said the knight Venator.
Neve heard the smile behind the faceplate of his helm and snorted with quiet amusement. Tarion was bigger than Neve, his bulky armour and its huge crystalline wings far less suited to slinking through the dense jungle.
"Where is Crean?" she asked. "Didn't wish to tangle his wings amidst the foliage."
"He is on high, circling well out of sight," replied Tarion. "Star eagles are not noted for their love of confined terrain."
"Crean isn't well known for his love of anything save you," said Neve. "Sometimes I cannot tell if he's your familiar or you his."
Tarion shook his head ruefully.
"Damn bird is lucky he's such a gifted fighter."
"We may need him to be so very soon," said Neve. "Zelkin is here. I sense his taint. The conclusion to our hunt draws near, but something feels wrong. What did you see?"
"Little," confessed Tarion. "It's a clear night and the moon is vast. Even distracted by ritual and blinded by firelight, I could not risk them looking up and seeing my silhouette against the sky. There's perhaps 5 or 6 dozen of his coven in the village. Stiltkin, Disc Riders, Ogroids."
"I do not see any sentries," said Neve.
"I did not spot any from afar," replied Tarion, shaking his head. "Zelkin is arrogant. He no doubt believes himself hidden in this remote location."
"The sorcerer knows we hunt him," said Neve, not taking her eyes from the village, from the warped kaleidoscope of vivid light that welled up from its heart, the weird shadows that danced across its walls. "We almost had him in the Carathasium. You slew his mutilith. He's a toweringly arrogant creature, but his mind is a barbed maze. He has let us run him to ground, Tarion. There's a trap here."
"Be that as it may, he's conducting a ritual in there," said the knight Venator. "Look at the lights. Listen to the drums, the chanting. Feel the power gathering on the air."
"You think that slipped my notice?" asked Neve wryly.
"You know what I mean, Black Talon. He may be summoning demons or opening a rent in the crystal labyrinth. If he slips away into the embrace of his master's realm, he'll be beyond even Sigmar's reach."
Neve cocked her head, listening intently to the timbre of the drums, the tone of the chanting, shrieking voices. Some sounded human, albeit rendered bestial in their frenzy. Others were cawing and avian. From amongst them she filtered another voice, commanding yet brittle somehow, as though an insect were trying to form human words with mouthparts not meant for the sound. She knew the hateful voice of Zelkin Zerkanos, favoured coven master of Dzeentsh and arch-traitor to Sigmar's great city of Azaheim, all too well.
"He does not sound panicked," she said softly. "Tarion, he sounds angry, spiteful, determined. Whatever Zelkin is conjuring in that village, it is not an escape route. It's a weapon."
"What then?" asked Tarion. "He's your mark, Black Talon. I merely hunt at your side."
Neve paused and removed her helm, letting the foulness in the air wash over her skin, steeling herself against its touch. It thickened imperceptibly as she waited,
like gossamer cobwebs caught on her flesh. She ran her gauntleted hand over her face, an unconscious gesture to scour away the invisible strands of chaos magic that gathered there. "There isn't time to seek aid," she said, replacing her helm. "Whatever Zelkin is doing, his power builds by the minute. If we leave now, he will have completed his ritual and quite possibly vanished into the realmscape again, long before we can return."
"There's a lot of them," said Tarion in a warning tone. "You know we likely won't survive a headlong assault."
"Neither will Zelkin," said Neve, steel in her voice. "What's wrong, Tarion? Afraid of death?"
"Again? So soon after Gallowfall," he replied. "Could we not formulate some sort of plan that doesn't involve a suicidal headlong attack on a Zinchin arch-sorcerer and his entire coven? Reforging has its price."
"And its boons. Did I not develop the talent of wind-shifting at will after my most recent reincarnation? What is that, if not a blessing from Sigmar himself? Besides, do you see another option?" she asked, easing her whirlwind axes from their sheaths and spinning them in her hands, refamiliarizing herself with their weight. She had fought with the weapons until they were as much part of her as the hands that held them. But it was a ritual she often undertook.
"No," said Tarion, after a few moments' frustrated thought. "If he knows we are coming, then any attempt at luring his force away or splitting them up will only alert him to our arrival."
"Well then," Neve rose into a crouch. "Take to the air. Do what Sigmar gave you the gifts to do. And if it is such a terrible inconvenience, then, I don't know, try not to get killed."
"Why in the realms do I hunt with you?" Tarion hefted his bow as coruscating arrows of lightning crackled into being in his quiver.
"Duty?" suggested Neve.
"Friendship? The deep-seated need to prove that you can keep up?" "Just give me a few moments to get into position, Black Talon," said Tarion, and again she heard the smile behind the impassive mask of his helm.
"Be swift," she said. Tarion spread the crystal and sigmarite wings that rose from the shoulders of his armour. Celestial energies glimmered through them, playing across the foliage like the promise of dawn, before he sprang skywards and punched up through the canopy with barely a rustle.
For all their repartee, Neve trusted Tarion more than any other Stormcast Eternal in all of Sigmar's grand armies. He would cover her assault with a skill few in the mortal realms could match. She glanced up through the swaying jungle fringe, seeking the distant constellations that marked where the realm of heavens hung in the distant reaches of the void. Up there, somewhere, she knew that Sigmar looked down upon the realms and the battles his reforged warriors fought in his name.
"Sigmar, watch over me now, and lend me your strength, that I might do your will and strike down your foes,"
she murmured, before reaching out again with her huntress's senses. She felt the winds etheric as they whirled across the lands, gave herself up to their ensorcelled power, let them flow through her limbs and course through her lightning-wreathed soul. Her eyes crackled with barely restrained power, and her heart beat faster as the thrill of the hunt welled up within.
"You may have laid a trap for Sigmar's huntress, Zelkin, but you had better be sure you don't get caught in it yourself."
Neve tore across the abandoned fields at such a pace that had any enemy seen her approach, she knew their eyes would have registered little more than a streak of displaced air and lightning. She cleared the village wall with an agile leap that carried her 15 feet into the air, thumping down in the bone-strewn street beyond without missing a stride. Overhead, Neve caught a fleeting glimpse of Tarion, wings spread wide, storm-charged arrow knocked and ready to loose. The Night Venator was no longer trying to hide, and neither was she. The street led towards the centre of the village, taking a left up ahead as it passed between the tumble-down buildings. In the distance, she saw Zinchian cultists clad in bright blue robes and grotesque avian masks wrought from gold.
Their exposed flesh displayed forbidden markings, and they bore the daggers and staves of minor wizards, while unholy fires sparked around them. The enemy caught sight of Tarion. Shouting in surprise, they pointed skywards towards the swooping comet of the Night Venator's Star Eagle.
"Much too slow," hissed Neve as she bore down on the cultists like a meteor.
Tarion unleashed a volley of lightning-wreathed arrows with impossible speed. They shot overhead as Neve charged. The arcing shafts lit the night white with their fury, piercing robed bodies and throwing cultists backwards as though they'd been shot with a bolt thrower. One man slammed into a building wall and was pinioned there, dangling and twitching as lightning cooked his flesh and set fire to his robes. Another took an arrow to the face and was catapulted from his feet to crash through the sagging doorway of a nearby hut. Such was the force of his impact that half the structure's roof came down upon him, burying the Chaos Worshipper in an impromptu cairn. Then Neve hit the cultist's lines. She leapt and spun, pirouetting through the foe with her blades angled outward. Blood exploded in fans as her axes bit through cloth, flesh, and bone. Zeench worshippers were flung away from her, crunching into the sides of the derelict buildings or rolling along the street to lie in crumpled heaps. The survivors were still reeling, frantic, seeking their assailant even as she hit the building at the street's end with her feet. Neve bent her knees, taking the shock of the impact and propelling herself back into the enemy like one of Tarion's arrows. She struck the head from one cultist and lopped an arm from another as she flew before landing in a roll and coming up in a fighting crouch. One cultist remained standing, drenched in the blood of his fellows, even as their bodies crumpled, spurting to the ground. He raised his stave with shaking hands and pointed it in Neve's direction. A crackling arrow slammed into his throat with such force that it passed clean through. She heard the man's heart stop as celestial lightnings coursed through his body and killed him even before his blood began to jet from the wound. Wordlessly, she raised an axe to Tarion in thanks, then sped on towards the heart of the village. The drums had increased their tempo and the chanting had transformed into warlike cries. "They now know we are coming," muttered Neve to herself. "It becomes more interesting from here." Neve rounded the corner between a tumble-down cottage and a mouldering tavern and found herself confronted by a hellish spectacle. At the heart of the village lay a rude square, in the middle of which a well had been raised. Into the sulphurous dirt around the well, Zelkin's followers had driven 9 tall silver pillars, each topped with an icon of Zeench, the chaos god of change, fate, magic, and mutation. Sorcerous energies crackled between the pillars, weaving a complex web of vivid blues, purples, greens, and yellows that hurt Neve's eyes to look at. A monstrous light beamed up from the well's depths, hues of indescribable madness that seemed to crystallize and warp in the air as they rose. Around the pillars was arrayed the remaining strength of Zelkin's coven. They packed the square to capacity, a throng of the deformed and the deranged, all turning towards her with blades drawn and screams of hatred contorting their monstrous features. With predatory speed, she took in the enemies that confronted her, assessed which were the greatest threats, which would be the hardest to slay, which could be ignored or evaded altogether. The vast bulk of the enemy were human cultists, like those she had already butchered, yet amongst them she saw knots of Zangor, blue-skinned and corded with wiry muscle, their bodies deformed with features both bestial and avian. A few hovered above their fellows, riding on fleshy, demonic discs. They wielded twisted bows of silver and sinew. Here and there, Stiltkin loomed, their bodies little more than masses of blue rags and dirty feathers, their masks beak-like. The weird creatures towered over their comrades on stilts of bone and gold, sutured directly into the stumps of their legs. And they held long-hafted silver scythes, which Neve knew from painful experience could cut through Sigmarite with ease. Most dangerous of all,
Several ogroid thaumaturgs rose like muscular islands amidst the press of foes, their flesh branded with glowing runes, their bull-like features and flowing manes crackling with power as they hefted sorcerous staves.
"There!" shouted Tarion from on high. "Amidst the pillars! Zelkin!"
Neve saw her mark, standing within the shimmering aegis of the pillars, looming over the well with his arms raised. Zelkin was every bit as hideous as she remembered, with his spiralling robes of flame and light, his painfully elongated limbs, squirming mouthparts that dripped acidic drool, and iridescent eyes formed from fractured domes of crystal. All this information flowed through Neve's mind in a split second. She didn't even slow, instead angling her assault for a slight weakness that she perceived in the enemy's lines, trusting that Tarion would cover her from on high. She was not mistaken. As Neve charged, and the enemy raised their weapons to fight, a storm of lightning-wreathed arrows fell amongst them. Cultists and Zangor crashed to the ground, twitching and shrieking as their lives were snuffed out. One of the Stiltkin toppled like a tree as an arrow punched through its leg, sending its scythe blade swinging out of control to lop the head from a bellowing ogroid. Neve's path was cleared amidst concussive blasts of celestial energy as she arced towards her target. Still, the foe were many, the Stormcasts just two. Tarion could not suppress all Zelkin's coven at once.
"Beware the soulfire!"
she shouted to him, catching flaring energies in her peripheral vision. Neve leapt aside as one of the ogroids hurled a ravening column of flame from the tip of his staff. The sorcerous energies bit into the ground, raising dust and steam as they blasted a trench where Neve had been. They clipped several luckless cultists, whose screams distorted into gibbering howls as their flesh melted and mutated beyond recognition. Bands of cultists raised their staves and sent balls of magical fire leaping skywards, a meteor storm that set the air alight. Neve saw Tarion weave through the hail of projectiles, drawing and loosing arrows with inhuman speed as he did. His shots reaped a tally amongst the enemy, hurling more from their feet by the second. Yet they struck him in return, a blast of energy blackening his breastplate, another smashing shards of crystal from his left wing. In response, there came a piercing shriek as Crean soared down from the night sky. The Star Eagle ploughed through the cultists' ranks like a blazing comet, raking eyes and setting light to robes with his magical energies. A knot of Tzeentch worshippers scattered before the proud hunting bird, and Neve cut them down as she sprinted through their midst. She dived beneath the swing of a Stiltkin scythe, hacking her attacker's legs out from beneath it, even as she heard the whoosh of its blade passing perilously close above her. Coming up in a headlong charge, Neve bisected a Zangor, then spun around another as it swung its falchion at her. The knight Zephyros moved so fast she knew her enemies would be fighting nothing but a blur that rendered even the most skillful of them clumsy by comparison. Yet they had the numbers, and she could not slow long enough for them to overwhelm her. She left her flailing attacker behind, hurling an axe spinning to thump into the face of an ogroid. As the monster toppled, she leapt over it, snatching her blade from its skull with a sucking squelch and a spray of golden blood. Sorcerous fire blazed around her in an inferno, bolts of mutating energy missing her by the barest of margins. The pillars were close. Zelkin was close. But the cult was surrounding her, contracting like a gnarled fist, massing between her and her mark. She could hear Zelkin's malevolent laughter ringing over the battle. Tarion's shadow raced overhead as he peppered another knot of enemies with arrows. His armour trailed magical flames and dirty smoke, and she could see lightning crackling around bloody wounds in his torso.
"I'll clear you a path! Just end this before they overwhelm us!"
he shouted. Neve saw Tarion draw a gleaming golden arrow from his quiver, star-fated sigmarite glinting in the witchlight of the pillars. Flames leapt around him. Zangor arrows punched through his body, each fresh wound causing Neve's rage to burn hotter. Ignoring the pain,
Tarion drew back his bowstring and loosed his enchanted projectile. It whistled down at a sharp angle, punching clean through the skull of the last Ogroid and flying on with a mind of its own through cultists and Zangor, leaving a bloody trail in the air behind it. A dozen foes fell at a stroke before Zelkin snatched the projectile out of the air and snapped it with a contemptuous snarl. The next instant, arrows and spell flame struck Tarion from three directions at once. His proud wings shattered. His armour was rent and torn, and his roar of pain cut out as a searing blast of magic blew his head from his body. Crean gave a dismal shriek as his master's corpse fell from the air, discorporating into arcs of lightning and racing upwards into the void above. The Star Eagle followed, becoming nothing but a streak of light as it raced after its master's unfettered soul.
"May we meet beyond the anvils," said Neve, even as she charged through the gap that Tarion had wrought. Her axes windmilled, sending cultists and Zangor tumbling with heads and limbs shorn away.
Moving at breakneck pace, Neve saw Zelkin gather a shimmering ball of magical energy at the tip of his serpent staff. He hurled the projectile at her with a hiss, and she slid beneath it. She launched herself back onto her feet in time to block the swing of a Stiltkin scythe, but she barked a cry of pain as a Zangor arrow punched through her ribs. She spun, lashing out with her whirlwind axes, sending the Stiltkin toppling backwards and felling two more cultists before snapping the shaft off in her side. Another arrow whistled past her helm and shattered against a silver pillar. A third struck her breastplate and buckled, driving the air from her lungs. Neve saw enemies massing all around and knew she had seconds at best.
"You did not die for nothing," she spat,
hooking a toe under one of the cultists' corpses and kicking it into the air. The body flipped, limbs flailing, into a mass of enemies and drove them back. At the same time, Neve dived around the silver pillar at her back, hearing more arrows smashing against it as she went. Bloody and bruised, she rose to confront Zelkin Zirkanos. Neve saw herself reflected in the crystal shards of her mark's eyes, every reflection warped and subtly different from the one beside it. She screamed in pain. In one image, her flesh burned with unholy fire. In another, it crawled with crystal insects. In yet another, it was not her at all, but Tarion, reflected in the sorcerer's gaze. Zelkin favoured her with a leer and slammed the haft of his staff against the ground. Light pulsed from the well, and the energies crackling around the pillars billowed into a dome. Neve stopped, suddenly wary as she found herself cut off from the cult warriors. Alone in this prison of crystalline light, with he who she had hunted for so many months.
"So obliging, spiteful huntress," spat Zelkin, his insectile jaw mangling his words in a way Neve had long come to despise. "To spend your comrade's life just so you might offer yourself up to my master as a sacrifice."
Neve rose and paced warily around the dome, a hunting beast stalking the edge of its enclosure. Blood dripped from her wounds, but she ignored it, instead taking in every possible element of her surroundings. She kept her movements relaxed, her expression neutral, while within her mind she sought furiously for the nature of her enemy's trap. "You have trammelled yourself in a prison of your own making, cut off from your followers, with the most dangerous close-quarters combatant that has ever sought your death," said Neve, her tone low and angry. "Hardly a masterstroke."
"And yet, the power that burns from the beyond in this place, the power I have conjured, that will spell your utter annihilation, huntress,"
crooned Zelkin. The sorcerer kept his stave leveled at her with one taloned hand. The fingers of the other were twitching, she saw, working some incantation while he kept her busy with words.
Neve tilted her head, frowning at her mark with scornful disappointment. Fast as lightning, she sent one of her whirlwind axes spinning across the dome. At the same time, she flung herself sideways, evading the inevitable blast of fire from Zelkin's staff. The sorcerer's attack missed Neve and washed across the inside of the magical prison, blackening the crystalline light and sending cracks racing through it. In return, her axe lopped Zelkin's hand off at the wrist before crunching into the far side of the dome and dropping to the dirt. The sorcerer shrieked in agony, an insectile whine that set Neve's teeth on edge and tore at her sanity. Cracks raced through the crystal dome, spears of light shattering free from it and spiraling away into the night. The cult's surviving warriors massed frantically beyond, hacking and smashing, trying to ram staves through the gaps to blast her with fire.
"Whatever you planned, Zelkin, you failed," snarled Neve. "And now, in Sigmar's name, you die."
Neve Blacktalon launched herself across the dome with her remaining axe held high. She swept the blade down in a killing arc that Zelkin blocked with his stave. Her weapon swung back and down, then back and down again, battering at the sorcerer's guard with ferocious speed. Sparks showered them both as his stave was shorn in two, Neve's fourth blow carrying on to gouge a bloody furrow in Zelkin's chest. Around them, the crystal prison shattered and spun away in a million shards of fractured light. Cultists and Zangor reeled, clutching at faces and eyes pierced by melting spears of energy. Neve raised her weapon again and brought it down in a savage blow that hacked deep into Zelkin's collarbone and half-severed his revolting head. Shimmering blue blood sprayed her armour as her mark sagged, falling against her and clawing at the gorget of her armour with his one remaining hand. Neve looked down at him with pitiless eyes, raising her axe for a last killing blow. Head lolling sideways, blood spurting in gouts, Zelkin croaked something through a mouthful of ichor. Even Neve's razor-sharp senses could not discern it precisely. She caught only a handful of words.
"Not the fate has wrought a curse."
With that, Zelkin hurled himself backwards with a last burst of strength. Neve cried out in anger as he pulled her off balance, toppling forward, feet flying out from under her. The dying sorcerer cast himself into the yawning mouth of the well, into the pulsing, dirty light of raw chaos, and as he went, he dragged Neve Blacktalon with him. Her axe fell, splitting Zelkin's skull, yet even then she could not prevent his dead weight carrying her with him over the brink. Her stomach lurched with the sudden feeling of precipitous motion. Neve bellowed in fury as she tumbled into an impossible, burning abyss whose dimensions the well could never have contained. She plunged into raw madness and lies made of shadows and light. She saw Zelkin's body consumed by the raging fires of change, fires that swept through her own armour, her flesh, her bone, and soul. In a white-hot wash of agony, she felt herself disintegrate. All is lightning. Burning light and arcing energy. Rending and tearing and hammering. The anvils ring with godlike blows. Thunder roils and rumbles. The two sounds are one. Cacophonous, ominous, magnificent. There is pain. There is ripping and moulding, flesh knit from star stuff and bones wrought from ferocity. And a heart that pounds with the thunder of the heavens. There is a mind again. An identity. There is realization. A memory. A child is crying. She has lived this before, this reforging, more than once now, and all is familiar, as much as such a process ever can be. But now, a child is crying. And smoke is on the wind,
and something terrible roars in a way that causes her soul to recoil. There is light, fiery and filthy with swirls of smoke, ash, other things, fat motes that whirl and drone in defiance of the furnace wind, that smack against the flesh like clotted hail, that bite and sting. Flies. The air is thick with flies. It is as though that one detail is the corner of something painstakingly lifted by a digging nail, a fingertip purchase upon an obscuring layer that she tears aside with increasing speed. She hears the child crying. She smells the smoke. This is not reforging, but something else. She hears the child crying, and she has to know. The veil is dragged aside, but it goes unwillingly. There is pain somewhere in her mind, motes of light and fire that needle her more viciously the harder she tries to see. She ignores them, groans silently at the agony as she pushes on and her vision clears. There is a village, small and crudely built, nestled at the tapering end of a steep-sided valley. She knows that people live here, proud, simple people who live off the land and fight for what they have. She has seen such places before. A scattering of huts with black stone walls and roofs of scaled hide, hemmed in to the rear by craggy cliffs and to the front and sides by a woven wall of thorny growths that looks every bit as impenetrable as rock. A small waterfall plunges over the cliffs and wends its way out beneath the village's living wall. Bulky riding beasts are tethered. Tall, gnarled fruit trees fill the valley, the fringe of a dark and sprawling forest. This is a good place. She knows this as surely as she knows who she is. But a child is crying. And the air fills with smoke, the river turns cloudy with gore and black matter, and the trees writhe as rot climbs their trunks and fouls their branches. Flies fill the air in their thousands, a roaring wave that crests upon the cliffs and sweeps down upon the villagers in their homes. Dark figures stride from the storm, rusted axes in their fists. Huge, noisome things lope and squirm on their heels, things that tear into the screaming villagers with tusk and tooth, tentacle and talon. She sees torches flung into huts, fire taking hold with greedy glee. She cries out with a voice as she watches bloated butchers hack down those who try to fight and those who try to flee. The riding beasts are bucking and flailing at their tethers, yet there is a sickness among them. The flies settle in their thousands and begin to feed, even as their victims roll their eyes and try in vain to escape. A sense of greater dread pulls her eyes helplessly upwards, to looming cliffs transformed from protective walls into the hunched silhouettes of hungry scavengers. The sky fills with racing clouds wrought in coiling light and fire. A huge figure is silhouetted against them, a shape that her mind tries not to see. She feels pain again, sharper now, and pictures needle claws digging through the soft flesh inside her skull. Angrily she pushes the sensation aside. She has to see. With that determination, the figure swims into focus. A monster lurks upon the cliff edge. Something with gangling, chitinous limbs. A flabby body bristling with spines and hairs. Flesh by turns scaled and insectile. Riddled with sores and busy with pustules. A multitude of membranous wings flit and buzz, half folded into its back. Bulbous, compound eyes stare from above a reptilian snout, crammed over full with rotting fangs and slithering tongues. Yet it is not this revolting amalgam of fly and drake that fills her with dread, but the being that sits upon its back. Mouldering robes swathe this tall, cadaverous figure, fluttering in the wind and parting to reveal his famine-struck body and maggot-busy flesh. For a moment, she takes him for one of the living dead, but then she sees his face, hidden deep in its cowl, his piercing, intense eyes, sore-riddled mouth, lank, greasy hair, and the trilobe rune of Nurgle writ in diseased flesh upon his forehead. She knows now who this being is, what he is, and as he watches the massacre of the village with detached fascination, she feels her hate for him swell. Still, the child cries, and at last she tears her attention away from the malevolent watcher on the clifftop. She casts around, her vision sweeping down fly-choked pathways over countless acts of cruelty and violence as the villagers are butchered. Here, a body lies sprawled in the rudiments of a herb garden, spine laid bare by an axe stroke, flesh swarming with parasites. There, a warrior tries desperately to buy his family time to flee, only to be sent screaming to his knees as his attackers vomit streams of acidic bile across him. Elsewhere, a hut burns and screams rise shrill and piteous from within as cruel laughter bubbles without. At last she sees the child, abandoned, swaddled, lying near a fallen woman at the village's edge. She feels a wave of fear and empathy wash through her, a desperate desire to help. Surely, any moment, the invaders must see this poor, lost thing. She dreads what they will do. Yet other figures appear now. Even as the vision begins to fade, she fights, resists, wanting to see the sinister creatures that slip from the eaves of the forest and dance in steps, at once flowing and stilted, towards the village. Through a veil regathering, she sees the thorn wall part for the creatures, sees their eyes like blue fire flash in the gathering gloom. She sees them sweep the child up in their arms and bear it away into the forest. All is darkness. All is lightning, piercing the shadows with sudden, agonizing ferocity. All is pain. She is Neve Blacktalon. She is reforged. Chapter 2. Neve stood upon a balcony set high in the flank of the Thunder Peak. This stronghold was home to Neve's warrior chamber, the Shadowhammers. It was part gilded castle, part vast lightning engine, and part stony mountain, looming over a region of grasslands and farms within the inner lands of Azir. It was tradition, after their reforging in Sigmaron, for any Shadowhammers warrior to return to their stronghold in the realm of heavens before they began their hunts anew. It allowed time for reflection and reassignment, an opportunity to find one's centre before stepping into battle again. Clad in a fresh suit of Sigmarite plate, her helm and gauntlets set to one side, Neve looked down upon the sweeping vista that spread below. Morning light spread pale and gentle over farmsteads, just stirring into life, walled villages beginning to bustle with activity as their inhabitants awoke. Watched over by the noble silhouette of Thunder Peak, and with the high star Sigindil burning in the skies above, this was as safe a place as Sigmar's worshippers could hope to live. Neve drank in the simple stirrings of life below, the sense of peace and civilization. "It is all this that we fight for," she reminded herself. "This, and for all of the mortal realms." Wagons rolled along roadways patrolled by Free Guild soldiers. Market traders hawked their wares from street barrows while children played in the dirt and farmhands plied their tools amidst golden crop fields. They went about their simple lives while zodiacal godbeasts and mystic constellations wheeled above them and warrior demigods watched over their every move. Neve supposed that one could get used to anything, given time.
Functional immortality, for instance. She took deep breaths, feeling the last of the reforging energies flicker and twitch through her muscles. Sometimes the process took days. New muscles, she breathed, shaking her head at the strangeness of that idea. Yet they feel the same. They feel familiar. She held her hands up before her face as she vaguely recalled doing after each reforging. She marvelled that these were the hands that had held her whirlwind axes upon countless battlefields, had struck down one mark after another. And yet, they are not, she said. Nothing is the same but my soul. Neve stiffened as the ghost of a sound reached her ears, as though it floated up on some rogue zephyr from amidst the villages below. For just a moment, she heard a child's disconsolate cries. She smelt the faint tang of smoke and raised a hand to her forehead, squinting her eyes shut at a dull stab of pain. Something flickered in the darkness, blue motes that stared back at her with frightening intensity.
Black Talon,
came a voice from behind Neve, shattering the illusion. She jumped, surprised, an unusual eventuality in and of itself. Neve opened her eyes, glancing over her shoulder to see Tarion standing a few paces behind her. He must have come down the spiralling marble stair from the chambers above, but paused on the bottom step when he saw her. The Knight Venator also had his helm removed, revealing short-cropped blonde hair, lively eyes of emerald green, and strong, open features. A tribal tattoo radiated around his left eye, a whirl pattern that he had once told her was sacred to the people he had been drawn from. Why such a marking of the flesh was repeated in reforging was a mystery that neither of them had ever bothered to investigate. Neve supposed that Tarion had been handsome in his life before. Now there was an otherness to him, to all of them that Sigmar had raised up, that made even his affable grin somehow unsettling and dangerous.
Admiring the view?
He asked, joining her at the railing. Neve gave him a level look. He had seen her moment of discomfort, but he wouldn't mention it. Tarion and Neve had been comrades for a long time, and he knew her well enough to understand that if it was important, she would raise it herself. Silently, she thanked him for that.